This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It is Friday, December 19, 2003, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This morning, our subject is gift gadgets for the geek. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversations with questions and comments about technology, computers, gifts, and the like. You're welcome to call in today in the second half of the show about anything you'd like. The numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. I'll be giving out those numbers and contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, our dancing man, Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta, John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Miles Elam, a student of American Literature. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you.
Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning.
You know, I do that from the Strong Bad email, or the Strong Bad cartoon every week. For you, those of you unfortunate souls that don't know about HomestarRunner.com, please go there. On the bottom, there's a link, SB email. Click on that and enjoy almost 100 cartoons of Strong Bad, which is a pleasure, I think.
Oh, radio technical show.
It's very good, Miles. Don't quit your day job. Oh, wait. Okay, so...
Wait, Miles doesn't have a day job.
Right, yeah.
You know, when you're introducing people...
Yes.
Miles sounds like he's got the least going on, but he's actually going to school and learning and improving himself.
So, a student of American Literature on Geek Speak. I love
he's
that.
He's also a geek in search of a cause right now.
He has so many causes.
Future high school teacher. That's what scares me.
Today, our discussion's about gifts and gadget, but first, let's cover a little bit of the news. Sean.
Adobe has opened up an ebook store. Not quite following in the steps of Amazon.com, who closed theirs. Barnes & Noble. Adobe has announced that they have taken on publishers HarperCollins Publishers, Simon & Schuster, and Random House. And they're going to be publishing these books in Adobe PDF format. Some of the things that you can... Well, they don't really talk about any specific books, unfortunately.
So, basically, the e-book format, the Adobe Acrobat e-book format.
Yes.
Okay.
So, they're pushing their own standard, whereas Barnes & Noble was doing both PDF and Microsoft Reader formats. And kind of in similar news, Google has put up a book search, which they're calling Google Print Beta. And what this allows people to do is to search for text within books, and they can call up things like excerpts from the book, critic reviews, bibliographic and author's notes, and possibly even a picture of the book jacket.
Right. We covered that a little bit
That was Amazon.com. Now it's Google.
Gotcha.
So Google is working with Random House, Knopf Publishing, and McFarlane, Walter, and Ross. And they're hoping that this will improve on the service that they already have.
Wow. It's amazing to actually have that ability now.
So this search now searches about 120,000 titles from 190 publishers and translates some 33 million pages of searchable text.
Into different languages?
You know, I don't know if they really talk about different
just
languages.
Just the language itself. Okay.
Yeah. But this is still in beta form.
So. Wow. Well, it's still great, the idea that the ease of use and accessibility to information will actually be usable for
that's what the internet
real information. Yeah, definitely. Thank
you. I'm envious of students these days.
Speaking of students, hey, Miles. what's up in the Linux world?
Linux of the world rejoice. Version 2.6 of the Linux kernel has been released. Support for Intel's hyper-threading AMD's Athlon 64, Intel's physical address extension. It's an extended hardware that allows newer 32-bit Intel systems to access up to 64 gigabytes of RAM.
Okay, so the 6.4 kernel is released, which means that...
2.6.
2.6. And the year is 3000. Okay. The 2.6 kernel is released. That means that all the Linux operating systems, Red Hat, different distributions, can actually start using that kernel in their code?
Right. The first distribution I'm aware of that actually has a roadmap for it is Fedora, which is the successor to Red Hat's commercial line. And they're expecting it to be released April 4th. Debian has been releasing a test versions of the kernel for quite a while, so I would assume that their testing version of their distribution will be up very soon.
Okay. So who's using the kernel now? Is it the developers mainly?
Who's using the...
Downloading the kernel now, because I know that they were pretty slammed.
A lot of folks are downloading the kernel in terms of the main site for downloading the kernel source has a 250 megabit per second link. They were maxed out for a few days. Like, as I was looking at the story, and the story was actually a day old, I'm looking at it, and it was still getting pegged.
Wow.
Now, can typical users use the 2.6 kernel?
By itself, no. It's the base level of the system. It's by making that stronger, everything that built on top of it, it's a strong foundation, basically.
Okay. So why so many downloads?
Because there are a lot of people who know how to make how to build foundations and to build stuff on top of it.
Okay.
There's nothing stopping you from making your own personal distribution or adapting one you already have.
Wow, amazing.
But for the general user, you're going to be waiting for about 6 months before they start showing up in force.
Do you know how long this has been in the making?
About 2 years.
Great. Thank you very much for that story. John, we haven't heard from you very much, so why don't you go ahead and tell us what your top of the news today is.
I have a picture of our president looking lost, which is nothing unusual. It's about the CAN-SPAM Act, which is the anti-spam act that Congress passed on Monday.
What was that political comment? This is geek speak, man. No, okay, go on. Sorry.
He does. He looks like a lost monkey.
I'm just stating the facts. No political comment.
The views on geek speak are not those.
Okay, sorry.
So the Monday, December 8th,
act, the CAN-SPAM federal act.
Right. It's a federal act that's supposed to regulate spam, but I have a bad feeling about it. One of the bad things is it replaces all the local laws, all the state laws.
Or it supersedes them, yeah.
Yeah, it supersedes them. And
California has better laws.
Yeah, it does. This gives spammers an opt-out that they have to include, which means, A, it has to announce that it's spam. B, it has to have a place you can go to remove yourself from the mailing list.
And presumably they have to remove you.
And it doesn't really have that.
And not then go sell you to someone else.
Well, no, that's exactly the important part, that they have to say they're spam. Yeah. Do they have to say it within specific parameters?
Which will make spam filters a little more effective.
So they have to actually say they're spam within specific parameters.
They have to say their commercial email.
Yeah, they have to say their commercial email.
Because what's the
one
stop?
One of the problems, you know, is it's not clear.
What if I mention spam in an email and then you filter that away?
But it's from you, so my filter will know.
Hopefully.
No, that is a good point. And that's one of the problems with the bill is it's not clear. It doesn't clearly define a lot of things, and it doesn't have a lot of harsh penalties. And, in fact, I think it's going to increase the amount of spam that's out there simply because it gives a way for businesses to legally spam in states where they were not able to before simply by including an opt-out email address.
Right, and something that says this is a commercial message.
Right, and so now they place the burden upon not receiving spam upon the receiver, where they have to click on a link, go to a site, fill out a form. Which,
right. You know, a lot of spam actually has that link at the bottom, and it's crucial to not click on that link, because what that link does when you get spam and it says remove me from the link is that most of the companies currently take that email address and say, oh, okay, it's a good email address.
In practice, that's actually not true. Most of them actually will take you off. People have done some experiments with it, and they have been taking off. It's usually the overseas ones and the random one, like 1%, that will actually put you onto another list.
Another sell list.
I went about this from another angle. I downloaded some software called the Atomic Harvester, and it's got an XP-based spamming client in it. Basically, it goes out, it grabs email addresses, so you can build a list, and then it has you just type in whatever message you want to spam people with, and then it'll spam everyone on that list.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the filters it has are you can filter out bounces. You know, like 505 people not found. And also, if they do opt out, it has the removal. So the spamming software that a lot of people are
currently out there
does have a thing that removes you if you respond to it or if it bounces, because they're playing a numbers game.
Right.
So the more email they can send out, the more active emails they can send out, the better.
The more mail servers they can hijack for their purposes that other people.
Well, see, this is legitimate spamming software as opposed to people who do take over, usually school systems that have an open relay and relay the mail out through those.
And you know about that?
I know about that because we've been, that happened to us several times.
All right, thank you very much for that. Sean, yes.
So kind of an interesting lawsuit happened this past week. A company called Optima Technology, I guess, was digging around its patent portfolio and found that it actually had a patent for a recordable CD-ROM accessing system. So this is packet writing software with CD-ROMs. So now they're going off to sue Roxio, who is the maker of ETCD Creator, to collect on that patent.
There's a lot of burning software.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. There's an organization called Optical Storage Technology Association, which is OSTA. They're the ones who kind of decided to use this technology. So anybody who adheres to those standards now is open game for this company. So it's not clear how far this company can go. But they intend to enforce their patent, receive damages, not only from Roxio, but from every other hardware software company using their technology.
Jeez. Wow. That might hit a big blow.
That might raise prices. Who knows?
That just might put a small company on the map and get them some money. But, okay, thank you very much for that.
I'll make for some better technology later.
Yeah. Who knows? Miles?
A fully functional system with no installation needed, or hard drive for that matter. Mandrake Soft, maker of a popular Linux distribution, announced that they have a desktop system that runs on the fly from a single bootable CD.
Where do you store your data?
On a USB keychain, a little small USB device. You plug it into the computer, you boot off the CD, you have a fully working system, you save all your files to your USB device.
What about drivers and such for, like, your modems and different peripherals that are in the machine?
It's on the CD.
So the CD
will auto-detect and boot up and go.
Is Mandrake pretty good on auto-detection stuff?
Linux distributions in general nowadays are very good at it.
They have to be, basically, because there's... so hard to get support from a company. So, okay, let me ask you.
Well, some companies actually do give a great amount of support to Linux developers, yeah.
So, basically, you get a CD, and you got a little USB keychain, which is basically a small storage device, flash memory storage and USB. You put those two in anybody's computer and start it up, and all of a sudden you now have your computer right there.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
That is.
I wonder how fast it is. Are you gonna get it? Is it paid?
It's a nominal fee.
Okay.
It's similar to another CD... live CD version that I've used before that I was amazed. I plugged it in and it detected everything, booted up as though it were a normal system. It didn't seem like it was doing a detection process. It was so fast.
And it's not using the hard... This new one's not even using the hard drive of the machine.
Right. It means that it's not even going to try to worry about how to deal with partitions on your hard drive and the like. All it does is go, do you have a USB storage device on your system? Oh, here we go.
It turns your computer into an Xbox or PlayStation device, with a memory module.
Yeah, it turns into just a general working station.
So you could do that and then also have a few games installed on that disk and you've got a game.
Presumably. This one, I think, is more office-oriented, but there are versions of live CDs, particularly Nopix, Morphix.
Do they write a PowerPC one?
I don't know off the top of my head. It would surprise me if there wasn't one, but...
Yeah. I think you should get that for yourself for Christmas. I mean, then we can play with it. All right. Thank you, Miles, for that. John.
SETI at Home is getting a boost. SETI at Home, they're the search for extraterrestrial technology. They do, they take radio signals from the Arecibo disk in Puerto Rico, and they look for signals, repeatable signals that maybe will hint at intelligent
and
life.
And SETI is a search for extraterrestrial...
Right.
Intelligence.
Yeah. Oh, did I just stop it right there? An at-home part means that you can download their screensaver on your computer, and it'll crunch the numbers on the different signals and see...
And destroy your hard drive.
Well,
no, okay, sorry, guys.
Just defrag like normal.
So basically, your idle time will be used to search for signals.
Right.
Okay.
So far, over the life of the project, which has been since 1999, 4 years, they've spent about $500,000 on this project, keeping everything up and running, which is a lot of money for a nonprofit organization. They've calculated the amount of 15 teraflops of data.
That's a lot of data.
Which is more raw computing power than the $110 million IBM ASCII white system, which is rated at 12 teraflops, which is currently number one in the world.
So that isn't a storage metric. That's a processing metric.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It's the processing power of it. So because this is, so if you look at it that way, it's a bargain. So Sun will be funding the next generation of SETI at Home. And it'll fit in a new technology called the Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing, or BOINC. That's a horrible acronym. And what they're doing is looking to open the door to an inexpensive shared computing for the academic computing projects out there. So
now, if Google has something like this as well, actually. There's a shared – go ahead and go to Google and then take a look at their development environment. And they've got a little bit of this kind of shared computing, distributed computing stuff happening as well. But the basic concept that Sun thinks that it's a technology that should be invested in, and so how much money they're throwing at it? Sorry, I didn't mean to derail
you. No, that's
there,
okay. Too. They don't say in this article, but they are going to be supporting it, which right. means, I guess, whatever they need, they're going to be supporting it.
All right, let's try to whip through the news a little bit faster at this point. Do you have anything else, Sean? That's
Yeah, you know,
thank you, John.
I do want to talk about this really cool technology that ST Microelectronics in France has developed. Right now, computers are kind of susceptible to background radiation, radium and therium, thorium, and other types of radiation. And what can happen is your computer can soft boot or have problems. Now, there's memory that's made to most memories has error correcting bits in it to recover from these types of errors. But, of course, that just adds transistors and heat and more, you know, power requirements. So what they have come up with was a way to fix this. And what they've done is created a three-dimensional design where they stack a capacitor on top of a memory circuit. And what they've done is been able to lower the chances of a logic bit or one or zero would be altered by radiation.
Okay. So basically we're talking about cosmic rays and other types of radiation that can throw electrons off the path.
Yeah, yeah.
So they collide with electrons in your transistor and they change the state of the transistor.
And there was a concern about this back when the sun was throwing off those huge solar flares a few or two ago. It wasn't as bad as we thought it would be, but the potential for problems was certainly there.
So now they're trying to design chips that are a little more stable.
Yep.
They're running.
Speaking of radioactivity,
yes,
a uranium bacteria has power potential. U.S. scientists have decoded and analyzed the genome of a bacterium which could help clear up radioactive waste and possibly even generate electricity as a byproduct. The organism has genes that allow it to convert uranium and other radionuclides dissolved in water to solid compounds that can be later extracted. And the best part is the name of this bacteria.
Yeah, what is the name of it?
Geobacter sulforeducens.
Sulforeducens.
Yeah, so, you know, mineral bacteria that takes sulfur out.
That's great.
It's like an elementary school name. I love it. Well, thank you very much, Oxygen Reducens. John?
Sony has announced they have a new robot that can run. This is significant in the way that they've done it. They've changed the theory behind robots running. Before, a robot had to have one foot on the ground for stability at all times. A person, when they run, does not. A person has 2 feet up in the air. So they've managed to...
At all times. Sorry.
At all times. All right, so they made a robot. I believe it's pronounced Creo, Q-R-I-O. It's a little 23-inch, 15-pound robot that can run at a blistering speed of 15 yards per minute, which is about 1.5 miles per hour, 2 kilometers an hour.
That's running?
That's running. But the important thing is that it can run, while it's in its stride, it can have both feet off the ground. And it's got
I don't know if I could, at 1.5 miles per hour, I don't know if I could get both my feet off the ground. But guess
you're not 23-inch.
That's true. No, not even close.
To keep both feet off the ground, all you need is a cat and a buttered piece of bread.
Let's not get into that now. No quantum theories.
Thank you, John. Sean, going to finish us up?
Yeah, this is in line with the last two guests we had on the show, Intel and AMD, respectively. And AMD has introduced a budget version of their Athlon 64. It is basically the difference is it has half the cache as the full version. So instead of 1 megabyte of cache, which is a pool of memory that's integrated into the processor to help speed up the flow of data through the processor, this new version only has 512K of cache. So, but the difference between the chips is the Athlon 64 full version is about 3200 plus. So 2 gigahertz. The 3000 plus at 2 gigahertz is half the price.
So basically half the price.
And, you know, there's definitely some performance.
Yeah, I wish I had known about that during the AMD show. Would have been.
Well, they just announced it. Yeah. And then Intel has announced that they're changing the name of their next version Itanium processor, the code name, from Tanglewood to Tukwila. I think it's Tukwila.
Why?
And the reason is Tanglewood's the name of a famous music center in Massachusetts. Okay. And Tukwila is a town in Washington about 15 minutes away from Seattle.
Okay.
Intel usually uses local rivers and mountain ranges and their names.
Well, thank you for that. And we'll just step right into to news at that point. I mean, to our geek gadgets. And one thing that, Miles, on our AMD show last week, you were pretty good about not just loving AMD at every word. But what are your real feelings about AMD processors?
Well, that's getting a bit partisan, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. And this is a gadget show, so we're going to go into it.
I really want the AMD processor over the Intel one, and it's basically because I like the fact that it's 64-bit. I have a database at home that I'd like to run. I'd like to goof around with it, play around with it, see what I can do with 64, like whether or not programs I write has 64-bit compatibility.
Okay. So is that one of your gadgets for the for your list?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If someone wants to send me an iPhone 64, I'm not going to turn it away.
Okay, thank you for that. We're going to step right into handhelds, and then we have Chris Dunphy on the phone. Chris, you with us?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, Chris.
So are you at your home in San Francisco?
I am at home, and actually Santa Claus just came and delivered an HDTV cable receiver to me.
Ooh,
so jealous.
Is it nice?
And Santa Claus actually looks like the cable guy, you know. They're one and the same.
We've all known that for a long time. So is it receiving?
Yeah, it is freshly plugged in, I've got basically like only like four or five channels of HDTV, and you know, but that's a start. And dang, it looks good.
So, is that what you're going to be doing the whole week?
Well, see, I'm gonna be facing a real conflict here because, well, I've got HDTV, but now I am a longtime TiVo addict, where I'm used to like if and when I watch TV, it's like on my schedule. But TiVo can't record in HDTV resolution, so if I want to actually watch something in high res, I have to actually plan the time around a certain schedule.
Wow, like most of the
public. It feels like the Dark Ages. It's
there is a high-definition DVR out there. It's not a TiVo. I think it's a Philips, but I'm not positive.
And I saw actually last year at CES, TiVo was demonstrating a prototype HDTiVo. And hopefully this year at CES in January, they might have official product plans on when that will be coming out.
But so you're not gonna switch away from the TiVo and try a different DVR?
No, there's nothing compares to a TiVo.
That's a good segment into John's wish list.
Chris, you've used several of these, haven't you?
DVRs?
Yeah.
I've played around with the other ones, but you know, I've been a TiVo addict for the longest time. And what it comes down to is just so easy to use and. I just like the remote control. You know, it feels like you're holding like this big peanut in your hand, and it's the easiest to use remote control I've ever used for anything.
And hey, a big peanut. Who wouldn't want that? so is it a good remote control in the way it feels in your hand?
Ease to get around, ease to navigate. It's, you know, I've got other, like my remote control for my receiver's got about 700 buttons on it, and you know, if I have like, you know, somebody over at my house, they couldn't figure out how to turn anything on. Or change the channels or whatnot, but you just hand somebody the TiVo, and you know, as long as they're only doing something that you can do with the TiVo remote, anybody can figure out how to use it.
My 2.5-year-old daughter can plug her way around a little bit. She knows how to rewind.
Yeah.
I showed her where the repeat button is, so if she wants to see something again, she just keeps pushing that.
Oh, gosh. That sounds like a nightmare.
Again?
Again?
the perfect feature for little kids.
So Miles and I are the only geeks that don't have the TiVo. I guess Dee Dee, too. She's in New York, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, I don't have cable, so. You
know, me neither. So we don't watch television. But, Sean, you recently got a TiVo. Do you recommend it as a gift item for a geek?
I can't recommend it more highly.
Really?
It totally changes the way you watch television. I think I watch less television, actually, because the stuff I watch is the stuff I want to watch. I blow
exactly.
through the commercials, and when I'm done, I just feel...
You know, that's thieving.
So do you guys feel obligated that you have to watch? It's like, God, I got a lot of things.
Well, actually, you know, I would say that when it comes to commercials with TiVo, I skip the commercials I have no interest in. But if there's like, oh, what was that? I go back and watch the commercial twice.
I've done that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it actually makes the advertising more effective because the way TiVo does it, you still see them in a blur as you burst past them. You still see the commercials, and then if something catches your eye, you go back and you pay attention to it.
Or rather, it sets the bar higher for advertisers.
Yeah.
I stop for movie previews, too.
Exactly. Movie previews I watch two or three times.
Huh. Wow. So it could be a better advertising medium. What about what John just mentioned, that your TiVo starts stacking up all these things that it thinks you want, and you're kind of obligated to watch them before you run out of space and start losing things?
Not the ones that it tells you, not the ones that it records for you, but the ones that you just have on your to-do list.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one this is actually probably would be the top of my Christmas list for the year, but I think I'm going to wait a little bit to get it, is there's a new TiVo model that just came out that has a DVD recorder in it. And so that way you can have the shows that TiVo's recorded, and you say, oh, I want to actually save that one. I want to save this one. You mark a couple of them and then say, burn to DVD, and like, and just a few minutes later, it'll spit out a writable DVD.
And then you can really start stacking up the stuff you need to watch.
Yeah, but that, you know, that way, that's one of the problems with TiVo always has been, you know, if you want to archive something.
Well, you can archive. It does have record to VCR feature.
Yeah, so but you're not having, you got that whole extra step of the VCR process.
Analog tape? What?
Yeah, and you know, videotapes. What are those? I saw them in a museum once.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Use the Internet, visit geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxel. Wait, let me try that again. My name's Lyle Troxel. In the air with me are geeks Sean, John, and Miles, and over the phone, Chris Dunphy. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL and spam filters for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. All right. Last night, our producer asked us all to come up with some geek gifts, some gadgets that sounded fun for the holidays, and we did so, some more than others. So let's go ahead and go to the longest list we currently have. Sean, what's top on your geek gadget gift want or desire?
Probably a 2004 Toyota Prius, and luckily I'll probably be getting it tomorrow.
Well, that's not exactly a holiday gift if you're getting it tomorrow.
Sure it is.
Sure it is.
It's the week of Christmas.
So are the... Okay, let me just ask the geeks that are in the room. Are Priuses a nice vehicle?
No, they're horrible.
So how many geeks are driving a Prius right now?
Chris, you and I are not, but everybody else does.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm actually planning to go buy one this week.
So. Yeah.
You mean order it.
It's like the cult of Prius, the official car of Geekspeak.
We can now say 4 out of 5 geeks recommend the Prius.
It's like everybody has TiVo and
actually,
Prius.
Actually,
Didi doesn't have that.
So, Miles and John, you guys had the Prii for the longest.
I had mine longer. I had mine longer.
By a week.
You had yours longer by a week?
Hey, longer's longer.
So, Miles is definitely the trendsetter of all the geeks. Miles, Sean is getting the newest Prius, and it's better than yours. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, he's going to go to hell.
I can't wait to drive it.
All right, the Prius is a Toyota vehicle. It's a hybrid vehicle, which means that it has an engine that runs on gas and a motor that runs on electricity. It has a large battery pack that gets recharged by the motor and by traditionally wasted energy like braking. And it gets really good gas mileage and is a zero or partial. What's yours, Miles? Yours is a PZ?
Mine is a SULEV, a super ultra low emissions vehicle.
And John, yours is the same, right? Because it's the same model. And what's yours going to be, Sean?
It's a partial zero emission vehicle.
Which means that the air coming out is typically cleaner than the air going in.
It's like 10 times cleaner than ours or something ridiculous.
It's pretty amazing.
You can breathe from the exhaust pipes?
If it had oxygen, yeah, you'd be set.
Basically, he should drive down to Los Angeles, drive to San Jose. As he drives around, he'll be cleaning the air by driving.
See, that's just cool.
It's funny, a hydrogen car, you could actually breathe through from the exhaust pipe.
So this vehicle, the Prius, it's not exactly a big vehicle. I mean, it's not the size of like a good vehicle like an SUV.
It's about the size of a mid-size.
Going to hell. Going to hell.
Okay, fine. Toyota has created this new drive in the new Prius called the Hybrid Synergy Drive. The Hybrid Synergy Drive is going to be available on all models by 2008, I believe.
And 2012.
Maybe it's 2012. And within the next year, they're announcing three or four more models, and I think one of them is the Highlander, but I'm not sure.
What's the Highlander?
It's their big, huge SUV, their Suburban of Toyota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was under the impression that 2012 Toyota was moving their entire fleet. Like, every car that Toyota sells will be a hybrid vehicle. Yeah.
Whoa. So I guess it's been successful for them.
Well, the 2004 Prius won Motor Trend Car of the Year.
Which is pretty unusual for what, hybrids have traditionally been kind of the cutting edge thing. It's not.
And they also mentioned in their article that the hybrid's energy drive is actually a prototype for the Lexus SUV hybrid.
So, which, of course, Lexus is actually a Toyota company.
So you're going to actually be seeing this in SUVs pretty shortly. Yeah.
What are the cool new gadget features of your Prius, Sean?
It comes with a voice-activated GPS system, which is kind of cool.
Which means what?
Basically, you tell it where you want to go, and it'll...
Can you say, take me home?
Pretty much, I suppose you could. I'll let you know.
Take me home via country road.
You actually have to drive it yourself, unfortunately. Right? Or maybe that's fortunate.
You'll end up in Alabama.
Okay, one of the coolest things this car has, or doesn't have, I should say, is a key. This vehicle...
Oh, yeah, the keyless fob. So, yeah, there's no key. It's just black little...
So you're getting a car, but you're not getting a key to the car.
You just keep it in your pocket. And the car knows when it's outside of the car or inside the car. So you walk up to the car, and you push the button, and it unlocks, like by the door handle.
Right, like so normal.
And then you just get in the car and push the start button and go.
Okay, it's
a start power button. It even has a power symbol like a computer.
The obvious question is, what happens when the battery dies in that little fob?
You get another one.
I don't know.
To all of our geek listeners, that to see Sean so giddy is so much fun.
Now, another cool technology.
You look like a four-year-old.
In fact, this will tie us into where I want to go with Chris to find out about the cool new devices and things.
Oh, yes.
But it has Bluetooth capabilities.
So the car, what do you mean? Like you can use the car from a distance?
So if I have my cell phone in my pocket and I get a call, I can actually answer it through my steering wheel, I think, is the way it works. And I can talk wirelessly.
The way Bluetooth cars work is that if you have a Bluetooth-enabled phone, you pair your phone with your car, and then if a call comes in while you're in your car, your phone won't ring, your car will ring, and then you can just answer it and talk into the car. And so it basically becomes a hands-free automatic. You don't have to plug any phone in. Your phone is in your pocket, and you're doing hands-free talking in your car.
I'm sorry, I'm getting that whole, wow, are we in the future now?
Yeah. You know, if we had a little bit more foresight, we could have had, like, the Knight Rider theme song queued up for us right now.
So look at this. Chris, if you come down here in Santa Cruz from San Francisco this next week or so, and you sit in Sean's car, you guys could actually theoretically make a phone call through his car, through your phone.
Yeah.
While sitting in the same car.
Okay, I love it. No, I mean, Sean doesn't actually have a Bluetooth phone, which, you know, is a good leadway into your next item, Sean, I think.
Actually, I was talking to Chris about this yesterday, and he turned me on to the Sony Ericsson T. It's the 610, I believe. The version I want is the 616.
It's the same phone. It's just the 610 model on the T-Mobile network and the 616 model on Singular and AT&T's network. So it's the same phone. They just have slightly different radios in them. It's a really, really nice, small, Bluetooth-enabled phone with a color screen and camera and great battery life.
And how many do you have?
What?
How many do you have?
Actually, I have the prior model to that. Okay. It's my personal cell phone, and I have the T68. And I love it because you really only need to charge the phone every 3 or 4 days, even if you leave it on all night. You don't have to worry about charging the cell phone.
And the new one has a camera. Which you actually have to have if you have a cell phone now, I hear.
Yeah, apparently so.
So how does that compare to something like the Handspring Treo?
So the Handspring Treo, and that's one of the gadgets on my list. The Treo 600 is just an amazing little phone, but it's the Treo is it'll run all the thousands upon thousands of Palm OS apps. It's got a big screen. The Treo actually has a full keyboard, so you can type and do email, and you can do a whole lot of stuff with the Treo. Whereas, you know, the T610 is smaller, and it really is, you know, despite having the camera, it is really just a phone.
Now, the T610 has 2 megabytes of memory for holding your ringtones and
pictures.
And pictures and things. Now, how about the Treo?
The Treo 600, I believe, is 16 megs of memory.
Now, does the Treo... Why do you want the Treo on your list if you already have a phone that's just wonderful?
Because they do different things. It's, you know, I probably would still keep the small phone around just because it's so small and the battery life's amazing and it's just a phone.
Okay, so Chris, what we're saying here is that you're first of all, you work for Palm OS.
Palm Source,
and you're the competitive analysis guy. So you basically get to play with peripherals all the time, see what people are doing.
It's your job to play with this stuff.
I have pretty much one of every interesting little mobile gadget.
You're basically the you have the best job on the planet. So and not to mention you get
actually,
to travel all over the world. And
I know somebody who reviews roller coasters all over the world.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Okay, that's a better
good.
Job.
Yeah, but, okay. So yeah, that job makes you sick. Great job. So you, because you're a gadget guy, you have a phone, and then you also want another phone, because, not for using it as a phone, but because it's so cool.
I've been around Chris where he had so many cell phones. One rang, and he couldn't figure out which one it was.
Well, and I also, I mean, I don't go anywhere without my little danger hip top, because, and, you know, that's technically a phone, too, but I use it just for mobile instant messaging.
So you have basically, you want to be able to carry three phones on you when you're not even working, right?
Yeah, actually.
I love the idea. Now with most of these new phones, you can put your own phone, you know, your own ringers in them. You can download your own rings. You need to get rings that actually say the name of the phone.
Oh,
or the
idea.
Or the pocket that it's in.
Oh, yeah,
so you
left
always
pocket,
put one,
answer,
yeah, left
pocket.
Front pocket, and you just, like, pick it up, and that's the ring. I'd love that.
Oh, yeah, but I only use take incoming phone calls on the one. So.
Okay, so let's say you do get the Trio. So you have that phone, you also have your Danger, and you have the current phone that you like that's the lower model of the one that Sean wants.
Yeah.
If you take those at retail price, all three of those added up, what price you get about?
Oh, well, let's see. So like, the 610 and the basic phone is free after rebate and stuff right now, so
wow.
You can go to Amazon and get a 610, which is one of the best phones out there.
But you're in servitude for a year.
Actually, I believe it's 2 years.
Okay.
So yeah, you are in servitude to AT&T.
So
actually,
one phone gives you servitude for 2 years, and then what do the other two phones add up to be?
So I think the a Treo 600 without a contract is probably around $500 to $600.
$450 on their website.
Yeah, but is that with a contract?
No, I can't see.
And the last one, the Danger.
And the Danger, I think, is being discounted a lot now. It started out at $200, but I think it's actually under $100 because it's a little bit old now.
So effectively, you're going to have a 2-year contract with what you do right now. If the company wasn't paying for all of this, you'd have a 2-year contract and about $1,000 worth of phone. That's what you'd carry around with you. And if you had to buy that phone outright, you're talking about $1,500 for three phones. Is that right?
Oh, the T610, buy it outright?
Yeah.
Without a contract? I think it's probably like $300.
Actually, if you have a service plan already, it's $149 with a $100 rebate.
Does this strike anyone as really expensive?
But if you have a contract already, like if you are already in a contract, it's the price is $300 and you only get a $50 rebate.
But so does this strike anybody? Well, I'm sure it strikes Miles as expensive. Miles, is this expensive, these phones? What do you think?
It's all expensive after $5, you know.
Now, Chris, talk about the
Sounds
Danger
like
device a,
true a
little.
Story.
What's the website for that? Do you know offhand?
Well, the place you can buy a Danger from is T-Mobile. They're the only ones who sell it. But you can go to thedanger.com and you know, see the details of the Danger hip top and such.
Now, when you IMed us from Lake Geneva, was that from the Danger?
Yeah, actually, no, because the Danger doesn't work in Europe. So actually, when I was doing all that, I was using my T68, the little Bluetooth phone I have. It's a world phone, so it'll work in pretty much any country. It has a GSM network, and I had that phone in my briefcase, in my backpack, and then I had my laptop connected to that phone via Bluetooth and logged on via the data network there, and I was sending you emails from the top of a mountain in Switzerland. It was really fun.
And then to rub it in, you sent us a postcard?
Yeah.
Of what you were seeing.
So you never even took the phone out to actually get online. You just had it in your back.
Yeah, basically, because that's the really the joy of Bluetooth is, well, A, it'll let you use headsets and, like, let your car talk to it. But I use my Bluetooth most of the time is both my PDAs and my laptops have Bluetooth built into them. So, you know, I've just been setting up my Tungsten 3 lately, and I've just got it set up. I press a button on it, and I'm doing email on my PDA. My PDA doesn't have a cell phone radio in it, but it's just connecting to my cell phone, which is in my pocket, and then going online. And okay. I never need to take the cell phone out to go online.
I finally figured out what I want for Christmas now. I want to be Chris Dunphy. I think it's what I want. Chris, that's great. I just love that you're so geeky that you the benefit of that phone is that you don't have to use it. I mean, you don't have to touch it, I should say. Oh, it's great. All right, this is Geek Speak. You're listening to Geek Speak, obviously. This is KOSP. In the air with me are Sean, John, Miles. My name's Lyle Troxell. On the phone, we have Chris Dunphy from San Francisco. Next on list, let's shoot over to Miles. Miles, we haven't done John at all, I don't think. So, John, what's...
No, you did it, Trey. Go ahead, Miles.
All right. There's really only one thing I want. I want it more than the Athlon 64.
Okay.
I want a Kyocera smartphone.
Why the Kyocera smartphone?
The 7135. It's just everything that I've wanted. In other words, it's a Palm Pilot, it's an organizer. In a clamshell phone, one of those small little phones you fit on your belt. And
does it run Palm OS?
Runs Palm OS. Okay. Has an MP3 player built into it.
How much storage?
It says it comes with 16 megs, but it has expansion for...
What kind of expansion?
For MMC and SD expansion, yeah. And it does not have a camera, but you know what? I'm okay with that, especially with a bunch of venues that you can't go in with a camera phone anymore because they're afraid you're going to take pictures of the museum gallery.
Right.
And
right. You know, okay, so no phone for Miles. I mean, no camera for Miles. Right.
Yeah.
Go on.
And, you know, two-way text messaging or depending upon the service. And USB and serial connections to it, so USB connecting to any place you want.
Okay, let's ask Chris. Chris, is Miles' choice a winner?
The 7135 is pretty sweet. It's hard. The one really cool advantage of the Treo 600 over it is, you know, the 7135 is a cool little clamshell and it looks like a phone. The Treo 600 doesn't look like an old style phone because it's got a full keyboard and everything. But the Treo 600 is the first Palm OS phone that's running Palm OS 5 and has the faster CPU, the faster ARM CPUs in it. So that is something to consider.
Which is good for when?
Yeah. Why do you need the faster processor in it?
If you're going to be doing more of the multimedia stuff, if you're going to be running more complicated applications, that's when you'd want it. If you're just managing your calendar and address book and your shopping lists and then there's like most of the applications run on the old OS and on the slower CPU. So even like there's thousands of games and stuff, you're still pretty well off with the older system.
Yeah, for me, size is an issue. Like I'd like my phone to be smaller. I like it to be no cracks. You know, I like it to just be fitting on my belt, not having this huge bulky thing. Having just a little thing that.
And Chris was just touting that too. That's why he likes the other phone that doesn't even have Palm in it. Even though it works for Palm Source.
Yeah,
this is Palm while being very small.
And there is actually a new Siemens phone that I just saw that is like, 2 inches long. It's amazing.
Now, Miles, you already have a Palm device, right?
Sort of. It's not really Palm.
But you already have a phone, that's what I meant to say, right?
No, I have a phone, yes.
So why don't you get one of those like little cool Palm watches?
Okay, that's way too small. It's too small to actually have a usable screen.
Let's find out. Chris, do you wear one of these Palm watches?
I'm probably the only person who has one of these Palm watches to wear because they delayed the product until next year.
But you're wearing it?
Yeah, I'm still wearing it. It's on my wrist right now.
All
right,
so you have three phones.
You have three.
Two of which are PDAs, and then a third PDA on your wrist.
In case you don't want to reach into your pocket.
And you got the phone because it's small?
I can only imagine what sort of red flags I send up when I go through the security at the airport.
All right.
See, I'm actually thinking of the novel Snow Crash. You know, the people walking around that, everywhere they're looking, they're getting information, analyzing people's social security numbers just by looking at them. And
Chris, don't go to war zone. You'll get targeted so quick. If you have questions or comments or just don't want to hear us talk exclusively, please use the phone numbers 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone numbers 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're here to take your calls and comments and questions and concerns about technology. We're talking about gadgets, but we'll talk about your computer problems. Anything you want. If you want to buy a gift for someone and you want an idea on it, give us a ring. Tell us what they're like, and we'll tell you what you should buy for them for thousands of dollars. If you have questions or comments, again, use the numbers now. The phones are open. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to geekspeak.org and find a way to send a message from there. All right. So phones, Palm devices, phones, and processors. That's what we covered so far. And, of course, the Prius that everyone wants, including me. By the way, top of my list, yes, I'd like a Prius, but
I'll put
that not going to happen. No, yeah, John,
actually, I don't want a Prius. I'm okay with the car that I have.
Okay.
I'm good with mine.
It doesn't have GPS.
but the phone does. The Kyocera phone has GPS.
Well, then there you go. That's all you need.
Nice.
John, what's next on your list?
iPod?
You already have an iPod.
Yeah, but it's the old one. It's the original model that came out. Okay, they're hip, they're trendy, they're useful.
Wait, what is it?
iPod.
Okay, go on. Sorry.
Okay, you can use it to transfer files. You can boot a dead computer from it. You can keep track of contacts and where you're supposed to be right now. You can play games. And you can play music on it. Lots of music.
You can play music on the iPod?
I know. Okay. It's Apple's little MP3 player. They're really cool. They come in many different sizes, all the way up to 40 gigabytes.
They always come in white, though, right?
Yeah. Any color you want, as long as it's white. But what if the geek on your list already has an iPod?
Like you.
Like me. Fear not, faithful consumer. The factories of stuffdom have heard your woeful cry and responded with tons and tons of stuff that can plug into the iPod, wrap the iPod, surround the iPod, keep it safe.
So out of that giant list of things, what's the top on your list?
Bose Quiet Comfort 2 noise reduction headphones.
Really nice headphones.
Headphones that shut out the outside world, so all you hear is your music.
And are these the powered headphones that actually...
Yeah, okay. Two little AAA batteries power it. And if you are on a noisy plane, noisy room, whatever, you can put these on.
You know what?
Just to clarify that, how those actually work, there's microphones on the outside of the headphones. They pick up the ambient sound outside.
There's
and
circuitry.
Then they phase invert it and rebroadcast it to you, so it cancels out that sound. So basically, it's silent when you put
it on. So you're listening to silence.
Right.
Active silence.
Active silence, great.
You know, I took Maggie into the Bose store over at the Westfield Mall, just to have her try on those headphones.
Why'd you do that?
So we put those headphones on, and they're quite expensive, like $300. And, you know, they're not as good as others I've worn. I could still hear people. I couldn't hear as well as Maggie could. She could hear me talking, no problem.
Yeah, okay with that.
It's actually that kind of sound, actually someone talking to you, is not supposed to be canceled, those. It's ambient noise, like static, things that are a constant source.
The roar of a jet.
You should be able to still hear someone that talks to you outside your earphones. That way it's not like you're going to die.
So I tried on the Sennheiser active headphones.
Yeah.
Those are really nice.
Yeah, I was looking for something a little more affordable, though.
Yeah, those are more expensive.
More expensive.
But I thought Bose would be more affordable. That's
pretty
expensive.
Chris, we're going to join your phone call with someone else. So if you could stay quiet while Doug from Santa Cruz speaks with us, that would be great. Doug from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thanks. Question about the Prius.
Yes. Can you go ahead and speak up?
What sort of mileage are you getting on your Prius?
The older ones, over the life of the car so far, over 26,000 miles in 3 years, I've gotten 46.8 miles per gallon.
That's about what I've had.
Okay. The new one is supposed to get, what, Sean?
It's supposed to get 55 on the freeway and 60 in the city.
Okay, so wait. The actual road testing Prius in Santa Cruz County, that's where you guys live, 46?
About. It depends. If I'm doing a longer drive, if I'm going out of Monterey, if I'm going to your or John's house, I will get above 50.
Okay.
But if I'm just driving around in town, going downtown, something like that, if it's a very short jaunt,
and I live up in the mountains, so I'm always going up Empire Grade or up Grand Mill Road, so that really sucks your gas mileage down, and so I only get like 45.
This is real world.
Okay.
This isn't even like the theoretical. This is,
and of course, John, you actually lots of times drive with family in tow, so you actually have some people in the car, and miles normally is alone.
Well, I've got my kayak in the back.
A kayak in the back, which weighs what, 50 pounds? Okay, so 46 to 50. Actual real world. What was the advertised mileage on that car?
45 to 52, I believe.
Okay, so it's right in line. So theoretically, if Toyota didn't change anything too drastically on what they say it can do versus what it can do, Sean should be getting about 55.
Although some of the reviews say that it doesn't quite get that.
Okay. Which is...
Do you know what they're going for now? What's their cost?
The base model is about 20,000. And then fully loaded, it's about 25.
So
is it comparable with other cars?
Yeah, very.
And the new Prius is bigger than the old Prius, too, so if you're looking for a little bit roomier car.
It has a hatchback.
It's on par with the Camry, isn't it, about that size?
Yeah.
And if you're worried about the battery, all of the hybrid electronics and parts are warrantied for 8 years.
So the vehicle will work for 8 years from Toyota. But that is a big issue, especially in the first-generation Prius. Big concern was that this battery pack is extremely expensive. In fact, it's so expensive that the first-gen Prius... Toyota was actually losing money when selling them, and they just wanted to seed the market with it, and it's actually paid off for them, obviously. But the battery pack, to replace the battery pack, is so expensive that it's real concern as a consumer.
But it's not anymore.
But now it's an 8-year.
The battery, I believe, is like to fully replace it, and people don't do that. They just replace cells.
Uh-huh.
It's about 3,000. And they think they can get it down to 1,000 in just a few years.
And it's going to be 8 years from now until you actually have to have any kind of cost out there.
Yeah.
Also, let's talk quickly about Toyota service on the road. Miles, how was your experience? You drove across country, and you did actually have a problem with Prius.
A really weird electrical glitch happened in Melrose, Montana. That's the corner of no-one-where.
I guess we lost Doug. Doug, thanks for calling Geek Speak.
And called up Toyota from from the phone in a restaurant that we were at, a little diner, and they sent out a tow truck. We got towed to Butte, Montana, and the folks there had been trained in Priuses, and they checked out the car and went, oh, there's nothing wrong. It was a curious little electrical glitch, and we drove back home from Montana and no other problems. So,
but basically, no cost out of pocket to you because you...
Well, no, it's a new car warranty. I mean...
How long is the warranty that you have?
For that type, I believe it was 3 years. I believe okay. I'm up now.
All right. Well, we lost Doug. And actually, because of my incompetence using the phone system, we actually said goodbye to Chris when we said hello to Doug. So, Chris Dunphy, thank you for joining us on GeekSpeak. And Doug from Santa Cruz, thank you. And Herb from Carmel, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Quite well. And what's your question and comment today?
I have an electric guitar that I made. And I've put in a lot of tone circuits, none of which have worked. And I'm really interested in finding mostly about shielding.
Now, when you say tone circuit, I'm not familiar with electric guitars. Can you explain?
Well, the pickups produce a little microvoltage when you strum the strings.
Right.
And that goes to the volume in the tone control pot.
Right.
And then it goes to the output switch.
And basically the volume pot is really just the amplification of the signal going out. What's the tone?
It doesn't really amplify it. It's a passive system.
Okay.
It just you can turn the volume down.
Okay.
And the same with the tone. But my problem is...
But I'm sorry, I don't explain... Can you explain the tone,
okay,
what
you
turn down?
Okay, when you have the tone control all the way up, then it's basically running a straight signal. And as you turn it down, it has a high-frequency bypass
okay.
thing.
Okay, good. So it's a... Okay.
With a capacitor. But my situation is I'm trying to shield it so that it doesn't produce excess noise.
Okay, and what kind of noise effects are you getting currently?
Just, you know, the hum and static.
Okay. So pick up from the environment, do you think?
It's just all the electrical stuff there that's not been shielded properly.
Okay.
Or grounded, possibly?
It's grounded. They're all grounded to the cases of the pots.
But that circuitry that's doing that step down. I mean, the big thing about electric guitar, it sounds to me that I don't know anything about electric guitars, but we'll just go from here. The signal, if you say that it's passive completely, which makes sense because there's no power actually being applied to the guitar. That means that the pickups, the signal, the output of the guitar is a very low impedance, meaning that it doesn't have a lot of force to drive the electrons. So the actual amp pickup, when it receives that signal from the guitar, any kind of deviation is going to be amplified massively. And that makes sense because you really want sensitive stuff. So what's happening right now is that an ambient noise effect's occurring in the system, which, you know, makes sense. Out of curiosity, do you have another electric guitar that doesn't have this problem?
I've played others that, you know, like standard factory ones.
On your system? On your amplifier?
Yeah.
Okay. When you built this circuitry, were you following some kind of guidelines?
Oh, yeah. It's the right, you know, it's the right formula.
Okay.
You know, it's got all the connections going.
All right. So you're dealing with, you just want to be able to shield it. I mean, we can talk about shielding it electrically if you'd like.
Yeah. Because usually a straight factory guitar is shielded.
Right.
And
so how do you shield your guitar? All right. Well, there's unfortunately, I am going to kind of have to give you some general information that maybe it won't help you, but shielding comes in a few different forms. If you take shielding is wrapping your signal, your stuff, in some kind of metal casing. And there's a couple of different ways to do this. You want either, I'm just not going to be able to help you enough on this, and we're running out of time. So if anyone knows the answer to Herb's question, and Herb, if you'd like to go ahead and send us a message by going to geekspeak.org, if that's convenient for you.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead and do that. And if anyone else has response to that, and Herb, I'll do some research for you about the answer to your question.
One question might be helpful, or you might have the answer.
Go ahead.
They talk about using copper foil tape in a roll,
mm-hmm.
like 2 or 3 inches wide, and I haven't been able to find any. Do you know where I might find that?
Have you tried Santa Cruz Electronics? Oh, you're in Carmel, right? I would go to any electronics store. Should have, not necessarily. Well, you know what? Go ahead and go to your hardware store and get. I think you can find copper tape for plumbing purposes. I'm not totally sure about that, but that's a possibility.
Good idea.
Good luck. I'm sorry we weren't able to help you more on GeekSpeak today, and we are out of time, so we're not going to be taking
Thank
any more calls.
Much.
Thank you very much.
All right.
To Susie and Amy and Bruce, sorry we weren't able to get to you today. You can go to geekspeak.org and send us a message from there if you would like. Geeks, thanks for joining us. I'm sorry that we lost Chris Dunphy. Is there anything else high on your list that you guys were interested in?
I think we should post our lists up to
I think so.
Geekspeak.org.
All right. Miles, will you be willing to do that for us today? Thank you very much. High on my list, by the way, these little memory sticks, USB memory sticks. Really convenient. Sean gave us some recently, and I just love it, having be able to store a little bit of data with you. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. Miles, Sean, John, thank you very much for being on Geekspeak today.
You're welcome.
Glad thank to be you. Here.
And for Chris Dunphy calling in, thank you very much. And for all of you that called in, especially those that I didn't get to, thank you very much for supporting Geekspeak by participating. Next show, we'll welcome your calls in the very beginning. That will be the 26th, next Friday. To Maggie, our producer, thank you very much for producing Geekspeak every week. It's wonderful. All of you out in our listening area, have a great holiday season. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. For Geekspeak, my name's Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned. Right now is Fine Print.